I have always been interested in paleontology ever since I was a kid. I mean, lots of people go through such a phase. I like to think that mine has evolved into a more academic understanding, but that's a little self-aggrandizing. I, after all, am pretty uselessly whiling away my environmental sciences degree. One theory that I see repeated in educational contexts, in pop science articles, in every single fun facts about dinosaurs for, like, 8 to 12-year-olds, or if you're Allie, 4 to 28-year-olds. One fun fact that I always see is, did you know that ancient Greek people just found an elephant skull, and they thought it was a cyclops because it's got a big nose hole in the middle, and they thought that was eyes? And I'm going to tell you exactly why I think it is exactly so bogus. I'm also going to do it without being self-conscious about using the word bogus, like I'm a 90s teenager. My name is Allie. 2.5 weeks ago, my cousin Adam disappeared under mysterious circumstances. The only way to find him again is by solving the mysteries of the monster world.
You're listening to WFMR, uploading anytime we feel like.
This is Finding Monster Right, After Dark. And these are the Allie Files. Something like that. Hey, little monsters. Yep, me again. So this week's monster is a little something from Greek mythology, because I thought maybe some of us might be returning very soon from a honeymoon in Greece and want to keep that Greek high going a bit. Oh no, reality is shaking together. Got to adhere to kayfabe. Adam's still missing. Right. Adam is definitely still missing. And I found a clue as to his disappearance. You see, I was walking past a tattoo parlor, and I saw a man complaining about a weird rash that he had. And the tattoo artist said that the tattoo on his arm was made of ink, not composed of any material on this earth. And in the mirror that the artist was holding up to it, I could see reflected the following message. Trapped. Wrapped. Over. Under. Bail. Locked in jail. Episode 25, Season 1 of The Twilight Zone. People are alike all over. Rating 8.1 out of 10. 3,677 votes on IMDb. Vibes. Wait a minute, the only person who would ever present that information in that order? The episode number in the season, the name of the show, the episode title, and then the ratings and number of ratings on IMDb is Adam. Adam must have sent this message somehow. But how? The mystery continues. Keep listening to follow the meta plot of our goofball monster show. Now, cyclopses. Cyclopes. Elephants. Who came up with this theory in the first place, even? The answer to that question is Professor Othnio Abel, an Austrian academic who was born in 1875 and passed away on July 4th, 1946. He proposed in the year 1914 that ancient Greeks may have found the skull of a dwarf Sicilian elephant, Paleoloxodon falconeri, a species of elephant that washed up on a small island and, not finding sufficient food to grow to large elephant sizes, gradually evolved to be smaller, a phenomenon called insular dwarfism. You can see the same thing in Homo floresiensis, or, oh god, Allison, think of a second example. Nailed it. Now, Othnio Abel made this proposal. And he was not a folklorist, not a classical historian, not any kind of anything relevant to that claim. He was a paleontologist. But maybe he had a really good understanding of what people would think when they looked at a skull. Maybe they had a really good understanding of how human beings worked. Well, about that. So, Atheneo Abel took part in an anti-Semitic riot in 1897. Following World War I, he claimed that his university was under attack by a conspiracy of Jews and leftists. He took part in a campaign to defraud and intimidate Jewish and leftist professors, and he described seeing the Nazi flag flying over the University of Vienna as the happiest day of his life. Whoops! Uh-oh. We got a Nazi on our hands, folks. We got a Nazi elephant cyclops theory. So we're going to attempt to take this guy's little idea here and just push it off into the dustbin. And to do that, we can't just use what is technically ad hominem. Yeah, just pointing out that he's a Nazi and therefore throw away this theory. That is ad hominem. However, let's not trust the Nazi scientist feels like a pretty uncontroversial statement. So let's talk turkey, let's talk trash, and let's talk about elephants, and let's talk about skulls. Let's pretend we are in a time before myth. We are ancient Greeks. We are going around to a bunch of islands, Sicily, I assume, and we find a skull, a dwarf elephant. We don't know that it's a dwarf elephant. We just have the skull in our hands. Now, when I say dwarf elephant, I mean that it's about like maybe 3-4 feet at the shoulder. Now, if we're looking at this skull and we don't know what it is, I am a hunter, a farmer of some kind. I live around domesticated animals, most likely. I've probably seen a skull before of an animal, right? And I might have some understanding of what a human skull looks like. I possess one, in any case, and I should be able to tell just from looking at this that this is an animal skull and not a human skull. The little hole that connects to the spinal cord is on the back of the head, not the bottom, suggesting that it has a quadrupedal stance. It has a big, thick jaw and, like, grinding teeth, more like those of a cow or a goat, although elephants are related to neither directly. But as a large herbivore, you know, things tend to evolve similarly. There's a big hole in the center of the thing, yeah, but it's like clearly two conjoined circles rather than one big circle, and if I know what a skull is, I know what an eye socket is. I just feel like that's true, you know? Also, if I think that's the eye, where do I think the nose goes? Like, if I know anything about skulls, I know that there's supposed to be a nose hole. And what do I think the real eye holes are? Do I think those are ear holes? What do I think the ear holes are, then? You know, none of it tracks, none of it scans, and most importantly of all, if I'm looking at an elephant skull, what's the most important thing on an elephant skull? Just like looking at it and assessing the features. The tusks. No depiction of a cyclops from the ancient world or from any depiction before this 1914 Nazi theory and its popularization ever depicts a cyclops with tusks. If it were really inspired by an elephant skull, you would think that would come up at least once. However, it never really has. There's no reason, ultimately, to think that the ancient Greeks would know so little about osteology, would know so little about what skulls of different animals look like, that they wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a skull of a human and the skull of a large quadruped herbivore. An elephant skull looks more like a weird big cow skull than it looks like a human skull. So why would they reconstruct the animal as being of human form and intelligence? Why wouldn't they imagine, if they don't know what an elephant is, why wouldn't they just imagine like a large grazing animal of some kind? And that is because this theory is fundamentally flawed. Not only flawed, it's unfalsifiable. You can't go back in time and ask those Greek farmers what they saw. It's spurious. So what other explanations are there? Well, there is a rare genetic condition, a disorder, a birth defect that comes up in humans and animals. You see the kinds of two-headed kitten born in a Swiss zoo or something, and you're like, why do they have kittens in zoos in Switzerland? I just made up that example. But you see things like, you know, born with one eye. And that is a condition called cyclopia, where a fetus develops with only one eye, and this condition is usually fatal in both humans and animals. Interestingly, the nose forms over the eye in situations like this, which seems like a uniquely monstrous trait that you might want to put into a depiction of such a monster. Flying against this theory is the notion that I'm going to mess up that every time. And furthermore, I'm giving myself a lot of edit points in here by doubling back on some of my words. I've noticed that in the last two episodes, and I'm going to try and fix those, but sometimes those slip through because your girl's up late editing, so. Anyway, the problem with it being a deformity is that cyclopes are never truly described as being a product of a monstrous birth of a human or humans. They are depicted as their own unique race. Now, one exception is the origin story of Brontes, Steropes, and Arges, who are three cyclopean smiths who form the lightning bolt of Zeus, the trident of Poseidon, and the helmet of invisibility of Hades. And I keep wanting to say the hammer of Thor. That is the wrong mythology, Allison. Those three were born of a union of Uranus and Gaia, the personifications of the sky and the earth, primordial deities in Greek mythology. They were imprisoned within Tartarus and made to forge those three magical items that I had mentioned. And they worked as assistants, sort of, to the god Hephaestus of the forge, who actually also was uniquely among the Greek deities, specifically malformed and ugly in a way. This brings me to a third volcanological theory, where the glow of Mount Etna in the distance is said to be the workings of Hephaestus in his forge. And to see it in the distance, and to see like one red dot on the horizon, reminds you of a singular eye, very Lord of the Rings. Now, the problem with all of these theories, you know, that it's an elephant skull, that it's a deformity, that it's a volcano seen from a distance, the problem with all these is that it's very reductive. The idea of a single-eyed entity is not unique to Greece. There are monsters across Slavic and Australian mythology that fit that description. There's the Nandi bear in Africa, and there's the Mapinguari of the Amazon, a creature which sometimes has a singular eye, which is supposed to be a kind of bestial quality. The Mapinguari is said by a lot of cryptozoologists to, similarly to the Cyclops, be a surviving giant ground sloth that is misidentified by the locals as a Mapinguari. That's similar to the Cyclopses in that it's said to be mistaken as some extinct animal. I think that interpretation is reductive. And I think some people, certainly not everyone, some of us just want ground sloths to be real, which, hey, me too. I would love that. I would ride one to work every day. First, I would need a job. Then I would get a ground sloth. Then I would tame it. Then I would name it, I don't know, Jason. Maybe I'm just got Greek on the brain. But another way you can use these stories of, oh, it's just a surviving prehistoric creature. Oh, it's just a fossil that someone misidentified. Another way you can use that very easily is to devalue the oral tradition and the literary tradition of Mediterranean peoples on European history. If you're some kind of Nazi professor in Austria, or if you're a colonialist trying to paint Amazonians as backwater primitives, you can just take their stories and say, oh, they were mistaking something for something. It's a tool that racists and bigots can systematically use to hurt people, to devalue the impact of different cultures on the human experience in a public theater, all while, you know, operating under the guise of us lowly paleo nerds. They're hiding in our ranks. It's like Secret Invasion. And just as shitty as Secret Invasion. So, what do I think is the origin of the Cyclops myth? Do I think there is one? Do I think it's necessary to look at things that way? Well, I think I have an idea. The symbol of a singular eye is, like I said, widespread across the world. And, like, Odin has a single eye because he traded one of his eyes to the Norns in exchange for wisdom. I would draw a distinction between a character that already has an existing pair of eyes and just cuts out one, and creatures that naturally have only one eye. There's the third eye in South Asian tradition that also represents a kind of power and a kind of wisdom and being able to see beyond seeing, see what the regular eyes can't. But I think rather than looking at a mythical or a symbolic approach, I think the origin of a singular eye as a symbol comes from the brain's natural ability. You know, when you look at something, I'm not imagining my eyes operating as two independent units. The brain takes the input from both eyes and puts them together into a single image. When I imagine my field of vision, it's like a cone that comes to a single point. So I think it's not a huge stretch if you're imagining monstrous qualities, if you're taking the human form and just changing it up a little to make it scary and different and monstrous. You could imagine sharp teeth, big claws, very big, very strong. You could also pretty easily imagine big singular eye, big, strange alien feature for a monster to have. I think that's why the symbol exists, but crucially, I'm not making the claim that that's what it means. I don't think that taking these just-so stories as gospel is the right move. Not everything needs a big, grand, universal explanation, Joseph Campbell, also a Nazi. It feels like if you're trying to look for the history of the Cyclops in science, in observation of natural phenomena, it feels like you're only seeing half as much as you could. Like half seeing something. If only there was a convenient visual metaphor for that. Oh well. Now, the Cyclops isn't. So are there any mythological creatures inspired by fossils? Well, it's inarguable that sort of. A little bit. In 1335, a woolly rhino skull was discovered in Klagenfurt, Austria, and was preserved in City Hall for centuries until in 1840 it was identified as a woolly rhino. But before that, it was actually used as the basis for a very rhinoceros-like sculpture of a lindworm. The same statue had a statue of Heracles added to it about 100 years later, and that statue is very funny because it has a very big anachronistic mustache. We also see texts from ancient China about finding dragon bones in, you know, the sediments of some certain province. And in both cases, I don't think people found dinosaur bones and said, oh, I'm going to invent dragons now. I think dragon myths in both the Western and Eastern senses of dragon were already extant in the region. And then if you find big bones that look vaguely reptilian, you think, maybe dragon bones. You know, I don't know. I don't have the resources at hand to know that that's patently false. I think the egg clearly comes before the chicken in this case. Furthermore, when we study mythology, when we study folklore, as I do very amateurly in this case, and in all cases, I think it's important to keep in mind the transmission and preservation of the myth, rather than trying to find some just-so story for its origin. And to that effect, the story of Odysseus blinding the Cyclops, blinding Polyphemus so he can steal a bunch of his food and stuff, which he feels entitled to because he broke into Polyphemus's house fair and square, which is an insane story. But the blinding the ogre myth goes back hundreds of thousands of years. Let's cap that at thousands. I don't think we have written records that go back hundreds of thousands of years. You know, it very well could be hundreds of thousands of years, but we would have no way of really knowing, would we? Whether they are building the walls of Mycenae and Tiryns, or forging Zeus's lightning bolt, or being stabbed in the singular eye by Odysseus. I think if you take the Hesiodic and Homeric Cyclopses, the Cyclopses of the Theogony that forge all these weapons, or the Cyclopes of the Odyssey that just farm sheep, I think taken as a whole, Cyclopses are good at representing the enormous power that we have within ourselves to create, to forge, to build, and also single-mindedness, lack of perspective. I think these stories can have a symbolic meaning in our modern context. I just don't think that it's an elephant, actually, is an important part of understanding what the Cyclops is and what it means. I think it's a distraction, and I think there's other better ways to get people interested in mythology and in paleontology. And also, the Protoceratops is not a fucking griffin. And that was the first time I used bad words in the whole episode. When you're studying mythology and folklore and the way we tell stories and the history of monsters, when you're finding monsters right, you gotta keep both eyes open. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to go a little more in-depth with some people who did more than 1 week of research on this topic, you can check out one of the books that I read for this episode, which is Cyclops, The Myth and Its Cultural History by Mercedes Aguirre and Richard Buxton, published in 2020. They go into a lot more detail than I did, as I said, and they also have not a lot of kind words for our dear friend and most recent addition to the Finding Monsterite Rogues Gallery, Professor Abel. Thank you for listening. I'll see you later. Man, if Adam were here, I'd be doing so many more eye jokes.